so let's call the meeting to order. Before we get started, I just have two quick announcements. One, sad to say that Anjali Basin has resigned from the commission. She took a new job, and due to the responsibilities and demands of that new job, she's just not going to be able to continue on the commission. So with the unfortunate and sad passing of Carl and Anjali resigning, we have two vacancies on the commission. So if you know of any qualified candidates, be sure and let the mayor's office, Lila DaCosta, and the mayor's office know about that. We have one more here, so. So if you can, let Lila know of any qualified candidates. And just a reminder to any of the presenters that the members of the commission are committed to reviewing everything before the meeting, so you shouldn't have to repeat and tell them what's there. We did have a very recent change this afternoon with regard to the taxi license transfer request, so we'll need to make sure we do a little bit of discussion about that to make sure we're all clear about what we're voting on. But otherwise, please assume that everybody has read the material that was distributed. So everybody have a chance to look at the minutes? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Any public comment on topics not on the agenda? If you've submitted something that's on the agenda, we'll have you come and speak right around the time of that agenda item. But we have this open time for anybody who has something to say that's not on the agenda. Okay. Any disclosures and recusals? Okay. New business. E1. Who for Metro is going to? Crystal, are you doing that? Thanks.
Thank you. I'm Crystal Martin, Deputy General Manager for Madison Metro, and I'm here regarding item 1E approval of the resolution for a new contract term with Associated Students of Madison from UW for a new five-year contract with a rate for the first 3 years of $1.35 per trip. The current rate is $1.15, so that's about a 17% increase. And for the years 4 and 5 of the contract, the agreed-upon rate would be $1.40 unless the current fare tariff for this type of pass is less than that. So if our current fare tariff is at $1.35, if it stays there in year 4 and 5, then they'll pay $1.35. And if the fare goes up to 140, for instance, or above that, they will not pay more than 140 per trip in years 4 and 5.
I'm not sure what that noise is, so we'll see if we can get that.
Was that distracting? You want me to go again?
Yeah, I guess so. any questions for Crystal? Ken?
Is there anything significantly different in this contract than the ones we've had for the last decade?
No, we are going to just clean up a little of the language and the contract language, but there's no significant change other than the rate.
Move approval.
There's a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstaining? Motion carried. Okay, and next we have item E2, Crystal.
Item E2 is basically we at Metro currently have some 37 vacant part-time operator positions, and we've had challenging time trying to fill those positions even though we're short drivers. And so we have the need. We've been paying out a lot of overtime. We would like to combine 24 of those positions into 7 full-time positions. And that's what this resolution would allow us to do.
Okay.
So you had 24 before. What were those generally used for?
Serving Madison Metropolitan School District on school dodger routes. So part-time meant you had a morning route and an afternoon route. You came in and only provided service to the school district.
And those are being cut back, right, Crystal?
They are. This past fall, 3 of the middle schools started with yellow school bus service. So we were able to free up some buses and provide service to Sun Prairie. This coming fall, another 3 middle schools will switch over to yellow school bus service, and then there'll be a final year where 3 more switch over. We will still continue to provide service to the high school students.
Other questions?
Move approval.
Is a motion?
Second.
And a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Sabrina? Item E3.
Good evening.
So
the item before you is to approve a long-term parking lease agreement with Hovde at the State Street Capital Garage. It would be an initial term of 5 years with the option for renewal for another 5 year by mutual agreement. It would be for a minimum of 20 spaces and up to 75 spaces, the rates being 105% of the resident monthly rate or 110%, and that would be based on which type of space they were getting. So there's one option where it would be kind of a limited hours, which would be 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. That would be at the 105% rate. And then the standard permit hours, which are the hours our regular monthly permit holders have, are 4 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday. So that rate would be 110% of the resident monthly rate for those permits. And it would be depending on what their needs were, but with also that rate encouraging the earlier parking end time at 6 p.m. We tend to have a lot of events in the evenings, but very low occupancy during the daytime hours, so encouraging more of those 6 to 6 permits through that lower rate at 105% versus 110. But even at those, we've do have the capacity there, which is why we're recommending this lease, ranging around over the past few years and also historically between 50 and 60% occupancy.
Comments? Questions? Yeah, right.
Questions? Yeah. Thank you. What's the purpose of the lease? Is it for employee?
Is it for employee parking or what?
Yes, these would be tenants of Hubbies for their building.
And do we have? I know this has come up in the past, but are they? Will they be charging for their employees for those? Are they getting free? It starts to get into the sort of traffic demand management questions mm-hmm. and the MOPs and all that we don't really have final answers on. But mm-hmm. Just trying to understand to what degree is this going to incentivize parking for folks that might otherwise look for alternatives?
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. I think it's something that currently we don't have a policy or ordinance on in terms of how we administer leases or put requirements in for offering, you know, employees that have a long-term lease, other types of initiatives for transportation demand management. So currently our long-term leases don't have any of those requirements.
And do we, I mean, we don't have a adopted policy on it, but if we wanted to put any requirements like that, do you know if we have the ability to or if there's any restrictions? I don't know if probably more of a city attorney kind of question.
It would be. I don't want to answer definitively on that.
Do we know, though, is this for sort of current employees, is this for a future project, or what? Like, is this going to displace parking from somewhere else then, or?
I believe it's both current and future.
Okay. In terms of the rate, I think we have a history of doing this kind of 105 or 110. Can mm-hmm. you talk through kind of how we got to that number and why we wouldn't use the non-resident?
Sure. So I did do a little bit of research to see if I could find any definitive reasoning behind that 110 or 105. There were some references to, using 110% based on the idea that some of those employees are going to be residents, some are non-residents of those the lease holders that are going to be parking. Although you could also argue that's true about any business organization that has a month-to-month. And then other kind of documents did reference just that lease terms were to be negotiated. And again, no definitive, I guess, rationale for that rate. I would say, and whether this had been considered or taken into consideration previously, that in general it does provide a benefit with, a long-term and stable revenue stream for the parking utility. And also, easier for planning with occupancies and less volatility there. And in general, the long-term lease agreements from a staffing and administrative perspective are less time-consuming, require less resources because they're regular parkers and users, and there tend to be less changes with either cancellations or additions compared to the monthly permit holders, which those do require a little bit more administrative work with less regular users and the turnover there.
So the regular resident monthly for the State Street Capital is 150, so it would be either 105 or 110% of that.
Correct.
And then as that changes, it would also effectively change.
That's correct.
Throughout the term. And so that the non-resident slash business is 180, so it's a little bit more than the 105 or 110%. So the thought you're thinking is that because it's a longer term lease rather than a month by month is where some of the benefit comes in and why we would maybe charge less than the non-resident business rate that we have established?
I think that it's possible that could have been some of the earlier rationale. I think there were also at times discussions about whether there should be a differential or whether just having one rate, and so that may have been part of it as well, just kind of going off that resident. So I can't give you a definitive answer on the history of that.
And then I think my last question is around the kind of when we are at peak capacity. So as you mentioned, we generally seem to have plenty of space, but then we have some bigger events.
Mm-hmm.
What would you anticipate for this lot, maybe how many times per year, and what can you tell us about when we are at capacity currently and where we might basically lose some of that capacity if mm-hmm. we're leasing these out?
Sure. I anticipate very little impact really on when we do see the event parking. Those tend to be evenings and weekends. So it's normally that 6 to 7 o'clock time frame where we see the weekday events occurring. There are, maybe a handful of events. I think of the WIAA where we see daytime users. Offhand, that's the only kind of high demand weekday event that we regularly see, with the majority again occurring evenings and weekends when these parkers wouldn't be using it. So I don't anticipate really any conflict or very little.
And are these like certain stalls that are then reserved, or is it just it's a permit holder and the stalls are kind of whoever gets there?
Right. So it's just a prox card that they get access to. So the reservation, so to speak, is just in our system in terms of counts, but it's the first legal available space that they find, so no designated stalls. And we do manage these like our other monthly permits where we oversell, so based on actual use. And some of our users range from, 50% of their actual permits occupied at any given time to maybe 85, but we are able to oversell, 10 to 20% on average.
That's all I had for questions.
Thanks.
Ken? So just the logistics thing then, Sabrina. Let's say they contract for 50 stalls, but they're thinking people only use them for, would you like then give out 70 passes, and then if it actually turned out that there were 50 people already in the lot, the pass would get rejected? How does that work?
So this would actually be based on, they would, Hovde would let us know how many spaces they want. So if they anticipate they only need 20 spaces, we issue those 20 spaces. That's what they're charged for regardless of use. And that's the number of passes that are issued to
them. Okay.
Yeah, so if they want to increase that, it would be through, a notification process to us that we would, pre-plan and calculate a prorated rate for that adjustment.
But it's a pass. It's not to the car. So, like, if somebody says, I'm going to be on vacation next week, do you want to use my pass? That's fine.
Sure.
Okay.
Chris, and then Jessica.
So once you allocate these lease, I think you might have been speaking to this just a second ago, but once you have these spaces allocated for lease, do you hold all of them at all times? So if the garage were to fill, you would assume that all those spaces might be used?
So usually when we get a new group, we'll maybe for the first couple months might hold the majority of them. So if it's 50, we'll probably want to hold at least 45 out of service and then see what the actual use is with that new group. But if they're using, if we see over time they're only using about 50%, we're not going to hold. We'll give a little bit of a buffer. But to make sure that we don't have any issues with them not having access, but we will oversell based on the actual use and make those adjustments.
And so about how many spaces would be leased of this garage, or is this the first?
We do have another lease here. I'd have to get back to you on that. I don't recall offhand what the other number is.
Jessica?
I wasn't here earlier, so I'm recusing myself from this vote.
All right. Other comments or questions?
Move approval.
There's a motion.
Second.
And a second. Further discussion. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions other than Jessica's recusal? Motion carried. Thanks, Sabrina.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have E4, which is to approve TC Resolution 51, allowing Green Cab to transfer its license to transport public passengers. There was an update sent out. Keith, come on up. And Amber McReynolds is, so Keith Pollack is here from City Traffic Engineering and Amber McReynolds from the City Attorney's Office. There was an update to the request that was emailed around to people this afternoon. So there was a recent amendment to the ordinance that allows for transfer of licenses subject to the Transportation Commission's approval. We just need to make sure we consider when we look at approvals like this, whether the current company is in good standing, whether the change in ownership will provide substantially similar service and operation, and whether the request is not contrary to the public interest. So because we did have a recent change, Keith, if you could just summarize where we are with it, then we'll have a little bit of discussion. We do have four people here. I believe they're from Green Cab and Mobility. And so they say that they're available to answer questions, but they certainly are welcome to speak once we have it clear what we're talking about here this evening. So, Keith, go ahead.
Sure. So Green Cab has applied to be the first, license changed under this new provision. Green Cab is actually, they are going to remain the name on the application, the licensee. However, they are entered in a new partnership with Mobility Transformation, and So they have new partners, but they were very honest in coming to us, even though their name is the same. They asked us our opinion, asked the city attorney about their opinion, and she said, yeah, that is a change in ownership. We will have to create this new process. So there are basically no other changes in the day-to-day operations with the company. I'm dealing with the Schmidt family on inspecting vehicles, individual licensees, any complaints or issues with drivers, employee relations, driver safety. Green Cab has paid their appropriate fees, all the licenses. They've been in business with the city for 9 years. We've had no major issues or concerns. They're not changing the rates or any way that they dispatch their vehicles. So no really major changes operation-wise. We do feel that they meet all the criteria provided in the new thing. They're in good standing, substantially similar operation, not contrary to public interest. So we recommend the approval of this request.
And I would just clarify that we're not approving TC Resolution 51 because that has the old information that was looking to transfer the license to Mobility. We had discussions with Amber back and forth this afternoon and this morning by email. We don't really need a resolution. We just need a motion to approve the request as shown on the application that was distributed this afternoon. So at this point, unless there are any questions, I'd ask if the four registrants are interested in speaking or if you're just available to answer questions. We have John Schmidt, Jody Schmidt, Ram, I'm going to say your name wrong, Ventajesh, and Sri Kallery. Go ahead and identify yourself, if you would. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sri Kallery. Sorry, didn't mean to shout in your ears. I'm Sri Kallery. I'm the founder and the CEO of Mobility Transformation, Inc. The goal of Mobility Transformation is to really make Madison the most sustainable city by reducing and eliminating transportation-related emissions. And we found the best way to do it would be enabling shared transportation and making it electric vehicles. That's the reason we partnered with the Green Cab of Madison, replaced their entire fleet, and we have been doing substantial carrying a lot of people and eliminating a lot of traffic on the streets. So our goal is to continue doing that. In Mobility Transformation, Inc. is also about to launch car share program, like the community car share, what we had in the past, there too with electric vehicles. So that's what we are trying to do. Our objective is to reduce emissions in Madison when it comes to transportation.
Hi, my name is John Schmidt, the owner of Green Cab of Madison, or maybe not after we get done with this. But basically, this whole thing started as we wanted to partner with somebody to be able to move the taxi industry a little bit farther than where we are now with the Ubers and the Lyfts that are out there. Competition has been pretty tough, so we're looking outside of the box. We're partnering with Cherie to move everything to the EV model, to expand our horizons and to look more forward to making the city more green, basically is what we're trying to do. So by us partnering with them, gives us the opportunity to grow with the tech, the car share, and the whole picture of everything.
Okay. Are there any questions for the registrants?
Okay. Just to be clear, on the side of your Tesla, what will it say?
Green Cab.
Okay. And this is basically, to be blunt, it's a financing kind of situation.
Yes,
you need a financing, you're reorganizing, but the operation is still basically the Schmidt's.
Well, we are part of mobile transportation.
I mean, the day-to-day running the cab business.
Yes.
That's what I meant.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Chris, excuse me.
Is Green Cab of Madison the only taxi company that you've purchased under this sort of arrangement, or is this part of a... Are you a larger organization?
No, we are a startup. We are from Madison. I'm a tech entrepreneur from Madison, lived here for 20 years. That's what I do, and this is a new company, and this is the first one what we're doing, and we're completely focused only in Madison at this time.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's a motion to approve the... transfer as requested on the license application.
I'll second.
And a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Okay, next we have item E5, the Neighborhood Traffic Management Program. We do have some registrants, but as is our pattern, we'll have Tom tell us what we're talking about here. So we're all on the same page, and then we'll have the registrants come forward and speak. Rebecca Kemble is joining us at the table for this particular item. And as we discuss the Neighborhood Traffic Management Program, I'd like to talk a little bit about the clip that was sent out to everybody from the TPPB discussion and some of the things that we've discussed in the past about this program as well. So, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm Tom Moore. Tom Moore with Traffic Engineering. I'll just go through the quick overview of the program first. So this was started in 1997, and it's a way to calm traffic in primarily residential local streets. We typically, the two most common devices we use are speed humps and traffic circles. We found those to be the best at slowing down traffic within residential streets. We always consider metro bus routes and emergency vehicle routes prior to getting to this point, so hopefully that is all worked out before we get here. This is just a profile view of a speed hump, 3.5 inches tall, 22 feet long. Parking remains on the street with speed humps. With traffic circles, they're at intersections. We opportunities to, if the neighborhood agrees to maintain plantings, they can do that. Otherwise, it can be just like a stamped concrete center. And we designed the traffic circle so that metro buses or vehicles like that can make all the turns, left turns. Typically, they have to make the left turns in front of the traffic circle. But it's usually the right turns that are the limiting factor, so we make sure they can make all those turns. So these are the steps that a resident would have to go through to get traffic calming devices installed on their street. You can see we are right now here at step number 6, approval by Transportation Commission. So getting to this point, we've worked with the resident or alder, but we have not surveyed the residents yet. So if it's approved here, we'll immediately begin the process of writing up the survey letters, mailing out the surveys, and we give them about a month to return the surveys to us. And then if it's approved by the residents, then we include that in the contract, and they'll typically be constructed sometime in the – it's usually late summer, so this is just showing the ranking system, the different things we rank the street on. So this is what a typical list looks like. This was 2019. We usually end up with around 8 to 10, 11, 12 projects each year. For your information, what we've seen is that it's kind of trending lower, whereas 10 years ago or 15 years ago, the list of streets that were ranked above the 30-point threshold, we had a lot more of them, whereas now it's the lists are kind of getting, for traffic calming, the list is getting a little bit smaller for streets that get above that 30-point threshold. So for the resident survey, one vote per residence. If it's a rental, then that means each rental unit gets one vote and the owner gets one vote for the entire parcel. And we require 60% of the return surveys to be in approval. So that's the overview of the process. I can discuss the 2020 projects now, or if we want to take the comments.
If we could talk about process just a little bit. We had a extensive discussion about this during our joint meeting with the Transportation Policy and Planning Board, and in discussions with other folks, we've talked about the benefits of and are planning to and considering forming a joint subcommittee with members of the Transportation Commission and members of the Transportation Policy and Planning Board to work on enhancing this traffic calming process. And we have the Neighborhood Traffic Management Program, the Ped Bike Enhancement Program. We've talked about some overlaps. We've talked about areas where, you know, Chris, at the Policy Board, you talked about one solution of a stop sign didn't appear to be an option. Well, shouldn't everything be an option? So we thought, and, you know, we'll have an opportunity to talk about it when it's on the agenda next time, that it would be good to consider having a joint subcommittee or work group that would work on this. So if you are interested in something like that, let me know by next Wednesday, and then we'll bring forward a proposal for discussion at the next Policy Board meeting and at our next Transportation Commission meeting. And Grant, did you have any other comments?
No, I think that covers it. If I guess maybe just wondering if people did get a chance to see that the video mm-hmm. clip, because staff did a really good presentation about both the NTMP program as well as the Ped Bike Enhancement yeah. program. So I think that would just be good, useful background. Hopefully people had a chance to.
Yeah. And if you didn't have a chance to look at that clip that Patrick sent out, please do before our next meeting when we talk about exploring this further. Harold?
Maybe a question to which I think I know the answer, but I just want to be sure. So the pot of money that the NMTP things are financed out of versus the pet bike improvements and all the other pots of money, like if one pot of money doesn't get spent down, that money can be used for other project, right?
Right. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, typically, we have leftovers from the neighborhood traffic management program, that account. We use it to do other pipe bicycle enhancement projects. As Tom mentioned, you know, the projects, the ranking system was created many years ago, and you have to meet 30 points to move forward. You know, 10, 20 years ago, we have lots of streets that meet that criteria because there are many more streets that hasn't been treated. Now, you know, after 10, 20 years of work, we took care of a lot of streets already. So the remaining streets is problematic, but not as problematic as the previous years. So, you know, we see the list getting shorter and shorter recently. So this might be a good time to look at it, you know, relook at a ranking system mm-hmm. too. So.
And I just wanted to add from that TPB presentation, So the ped bike enhancement list, that's, you know, that's sort of another process. But there's also, I think staff mentioned there were like over 100 potential projects on that list last year. I think there's quite a few this year, and those are coming from kind of all different areas. But just, again, kind of to Harold's question, there are plenty of other good projects to put money towards. So just in terms of when we're evaluating these and whether we vote to approve them to move forward or not, there are other things that money could go to that are being reviewed right now, and it's kind of a separate program.
Sure.
Correct.
Okay. So our pattern would be to have Tom go through the various presentations and then ask the folks from the public to speak after we have that presentation.
Okay, I think you have the list in front of you, and this is it. So, yeah, I have Walter Street on here, and I have that's not shaded because we are going to pursue some a test this summer with some temporary bump outs that would not be part of this program, so that's why it's not. We don't have any anything included as far as a device for this program, but just to show you where it ranks. So we'll go through each one here, one by one. Here's the overview map that shows where each project is. Prairie Road, this is at Hugel Elementary School. worked with the alder and resident, initially came from a resident, but worked with then with the alder, and the school is on board with this as well. Prairie Road is it's a collector. It's a high volume for speed humps, but there are no bus routes on this section, and fire is okay with it, so I think this would be a good project. Metal Arc Drive, this is at Kennedy Elementary School. So this one was up for speed humps, I think, 3 or 4 years ago, and it was ultimately voted down by one vote. So there's, I think, a couple new residents in the on the street, and they wanted to pursue this again. So I think back when it was first proposed, there were 4 speed humps. We reduced it down to 3 just to keep it in front of the school. So.
Is this the one that had other alternatives that you sent out, Tom?
No. You might be looking at Swanton.
Yeah, I guess I am looking at Swanton. Sorry.
Green Avenue. This is far northwest.
In a different order. Sorry, mine are in a different order in my packet.
Oh.
Sorry about that.
So the complaint here is initially wanted an all-way stop at the Knutson Green intersection. Did not meet the warrant, so we were looking at a traffic circle. And the residents of this block of Green Avenue north of Knutson had a speeding complaint there, so we were able to fit in 2 speed humps there. I think residents would prefer speed humps south of Knutson, but because of metro routes, we're avoiding anything south of Knutson. Inner Drive, this is by Alice, Frank Alice, or no, not, this is, no, not Kennedy, Hawthorne's. That
was it.
John Muir. Another school. Another school location. There is an existing island just further to the east at Yellowstone, but there was a complaint about traffic coming around the curve of Inner Drive, which is also next to a park. Because of bus routes, we weren't able to put speed humps in, but we are able to fit in a couple islands. The red area is where we would have to remove existing on-street parking, but I think this is would be a good project for helping with the pedestrian crossing here too. Lexington Avenue, this is at Hawthorne Elementary. There's kind of a long stretch here between stop signs right in front of the school. So 3 speed humps fit in nicely here. Spate Street, you probably remember Spate Street. Ultimately, speed humps were decided to not go in. So we did add the parking in, which is shown on the north side of Spate Street adjacent to the school property. And then Metro is okay with the traffic circle. So, again, this is a traffic circle. We haven't really worked out with the neighborhood, but there would be an option for the neighborhood sign into agreement with the city to maintain plantings if they would like to do that. Spooner Street, this complaint here is that primarily northbound traffic, as they see the green light at the signal at the intersection of Region and Spooner, accelerates to make that green light. So there's an existing island right between the 2 speed humps. That's why that gap is shown there. So the speed humps would be able to fit right at that island. And this is signed as a 15-mile-per-hour street, so this is kind of an interesting area that has had speeding problems. Tompkins Drive, this was reconstructed a few years ago, and at that time we surveyed the residents for speed humps, and they just, again, like Metalark, just barely voted down speed humps. So between now and then, Metro, due to Metro's concerns with speed humps and on-time performance issues, we ruled out speed humps, so we're looking at traffic circles at the four-legged intersections here. And they'll work with the bus stop locations. But these are the three four-legged intersections, so we're proposing circles at each of those.
Can you just show this? I think this is a good example. Is there a little pointer that you can use? Who gets surveyed for this? Is it just the people on Tompkins?
No, we would go up the side streets. Yeah. It's those dimensions are kind of laid out in the traffic calming manual. So I think it's between it's based on volumes. I think where the minor street is has much less volume than the major street. I think it's 200 to 300 feet, somewhere around there.
So if any part of your property is within 200 feet of the roadway?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So I think for these, for like Groveland, we'd probably go all the way to Acacia. For Harrow, we probably would not go all the way up to the next intersecting street.
Okay, thanks.
This is the 800 block of Spade Street, right next to Park. The complaint here is, I think, primarily westbound traffic that comes speeding around the corner. There have been a couple crashes due to that. And then the people that visit the park on one side of Spade, crossing Spade, so there's kind of a dangerous situation with speeding and pedestrians. So I included Swanton because we ranked it in the list. But this would not be a neighborhood traffic management program project because this is more of an overall change to the street where we would remove parking from one side. And I think we're going to come back in a future meeting to discuss this. But we were originally looking at a traffic circle, but to get bike facilities on the street, we wanted to go this route. So this would not be something that you're approving as part of this group of projects. We would come back to discuss this at a later meeting. So that's it. If there's any questions, I can answer those. Or
can you go back over that one more time, Tom?
Over Swanton?
Not approving?
So we rank this as part of the traffic calming program. We were going back and forth. We were looking at a traffic circle at Hamlet Place. Mm-hmm. I think if we went the route of a traffic circle, then it would be part of the neighborhood traffic management program. But since we're looking at adding bike lanes, mm-hmm. it's more of a complete change to the entire length of the street, where that would not be a project that's part of this program. So that's something that we would I think we first want to talk or discuss with the neighborhood, and then we would come back and propose it as a project at a later meeting.
Okay, so number two, Swanton, we're going to exclude for this evening.
Yep.
Okay, we had a number of alternatives that we saw, just to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Yep.
Okay.
So Swanson is not part
Swanton.
Of the program?
Swanton, right.
Swanton?
Mm-hmm. Number two.
Maybe.
So we have, we look at the...
not tonight.
Yeah, we look at a street from in a traffic calming perspective. If we go that route, we'll come back for it. Mm-hmm. However, though, there is also some interest on adding bike lanes on the entire stretch of Swanton Road. To do that, we'll probably do that through a different program. So I think Tom saying this is one of the requests for traffic calming. Tom included that in this list.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll not seek approval for this one this time. if we do decide to go with a traffic circle route, we'll come back for that.
Okay.
And I noticed that Alder Kimball is here, and I'm assuming she might have something to say.
Sure. I was going to let the public registrants go first, and then.
Okay.
You okay with that, Rebecca? Yep. Okay, we have Ross Wenenberg, 836 Spate Street, wishes to speak in support. You have 3 minutes, correct?
Nice. Mm-hmm. My name is Ross Wenenberg. I live at 836 Spate Street, kind of right in the middle of the block across from B.B. Clark Beach. I submitted the original petition for this in 2017 for some speed humps. We didn't make the cut then, but we've had a number of accidents since then. And on the west end of the block, so we got bumped up to the up higher in the list. As Tom mentioned, a few people speeding every day, speeding down, going west on Spate Street. So the 1100 block and 1000 block has speed humps. The 900 block doesn't, and then that's also a hill going west, coming around that bend on the right there. And by the time they get down to the stoplight or stop sign, they're going pretty fast. And with the park across the street, all the neighbors on the block felt that it was important to do something about that. So I'm here tonight to request you to approve this.
Okay. Are there any questions for the registrant? Chris?
This was one of the ones that caught my attention, actually, because it's technically two-way, right? But you can't enter from the...
Yeah, so what actually happens is quite a few people go ignore the do not enter sign, so there's actually people going both directions.
How would you feel about turning that into a proper one-way for that block?
Wouldn't make any difference to me. I suspect the fire department might not like that. I don't know. I suppose they can go against them. I don't know how that works. But
thanks.
I'm not sure why it isn't. But
Carl?
Can you say something about the crashes that happened there? It looks like those were like...
Sure. There was one in, well, 2014, I'll start earlier back from my memory. It was right in the middle of the block with a car going in the wrong direction.
Oh.
So they entered the wrong way. I think the last one was, I forget, I have it. I have pictures and dates here. I think that was 2018, if I remember right. That was at the east end, or sorry, west end, and they couldn't negotiate that final bend. There is a stop sign, but they couldn't negotiate that and almost took out a fire hydrant. That 2017 was when that was, I think. There was one in 2018 too, but that was on Patterson. So then 2016 was another one at that same spot where they couldn't get around the bend on the west end. 2014 was the one where the car was going eastbound and hit a telephone pole right in front of the park.
Thank you.
Other questions for the registrant? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We have a second person, Mr. Heinzel, at 4309 Green Avenue, supports the traffic calming on Green Avenue, available to answer questions. Anybody have any questions for the registrant?
Okay.
Rebecca, go ahead.
If I can ask. Could you come and just talk about the crashes and the safety issue? You need to be on the the microphone.
Come on up.
Because we're on the city channel.
We're not.
Okay. I'm the breaker.
Okay.
So, a little over 2 years ago, I parked my three-year-old Toyota Tacoma on the street because we were having a pod delivered to the driveway. And I was sitting in the house at maybe 4, 5 in the afternoon, and heard a loud noise, sounded like an explosion or something, and looked out, and there's smoke. Someone had come down Knutson, didn't stop at the stop sign, turned right down Green, hit the rear side of the truck. Essentially, it was a total loss. His car was damaged, but he managed to continue down Green all the way and then down Westport and ended up in the parking lot of the Naughty Gal. It was his fourth or fifth DUI. He had a loaded gun in the car with him. He tried to jump into the river to escape the county sheriffs who came. It was quite the experience. That's actually one of the... since then, there have been major one where somebody came down Green Avenue and to the left, up the hill. And so Green Avenue is broad and straight, and there's no parking on the east side, parking on the west side. And it's a pretty straight shot. It's 25-mile-an-hour speed limit, however. You find yourself going a lot faster than that because it's just this broad open space and people come down. I take the bus that goes there to West and Murphy, and the bus drivers quite often hit 35 miles an hour on that section. We've seen, and I know that there have been some studies that actually had measurements, et cetera, and I know it can be hard to tell how fast people are going, but they've been going quite well. At the curve where Green turns toward Westport, there are several trees that have had to be replaced recently because people going too fast don't make the curve and have taken out some of the trees. There's a house near the end two occasions someone almost ended up in their living room. They took out their trees, went through and up over the driveway, down across their plantings, et cetera. I've spoken to some of the people on Knutson as well, and folks coming off of Northport, going across the bridge and down Knutson, even though it's not a very smooth road, they are often speeding. And one of my neighbors, the second one up from Green, has had her mailbox gone. They had to replace a culvert there because they crashed into it. Essentially lifting up off of the... And they go over the bump and end up in the air coming so fast. And so I don't know why anybody does that, but it's happened several times. So we have had quite a bit of that. My neighbor across the street was, he's a really nice guy, Ron, was laid off briefly because of some health issues. And he was sitting out in his driveway with in a chair with a tennis ball. And whenever somebody would come by speeding, he would toss the tennis ball out. And they would sometimes stop, you know, slam their brakes on and stop until they saw him and decided that discretion is the better part of valor because he's a big guy. It took off again. But that actually works quite well to slow traffic down.
Not it's an sure unusual that, traffic calming method.
playbook for Madison. Yeah, we have noticed this for quite some time, and as I mentioned, that we originally had asked that a four-way stop, and I can understand that there are specific rules about stops, stop signs, et cetera, but everyone I know along the street it says that this would be fine. I actually think a traffic circle, I hadn't considered that, would be nice. I would love to put some plantings in there and have some nice flowers and stuff decorated up. The one-speed hump will be right at my property line, so I imagine I will be sometimes hearing things. But the calming circle actually should do its work, and people shouldn't be going too fast. We'll see. I say I'm definitely in favor of this, and hopefully we can't really do much about the people who are driving drunk.
Yeah.
People who are just not paying attention and speeding a little too fast, I think this will help.
So are there questions for him? Okay, thank you. Rebecca, did you have some comments?
No, I'm just very much in support of this. I hear a lot of resident
feedback about Knutson and Green, and in fact, the other part of Green as well. There are have been public safety issues in this neighborhood because this is a neighborhood that borders, I mean, it's basically swamp on one side, part of the Cherokee Marsh and the lake on the other, and so people go to the far edges of this neighborhood to conduct illicit activities, and sometimes they get caught and chase each other, and there's been issues with lighting. So this has been kind of a hot spot in my district for all over public safety issues. It's a lovely neighborhood. The people who live there are very nice and would take care of plantings should there be some there. But I think this, this just makes sense. And whether it, I didn't see that, I didn't track on the number of points, but I really appreciate Thomas's following up with the neighbors on this and heavily support it.
Thank you. So, discussion.
Move approval of numbers 2 through 11 with the request that somebody, Tom or somebody else, they don't need to come here, but at least inform us if or what they decide to do as far as SWAT. So I'm assuming that by approving them, it gives them the discretion not to do number 2 if they decide that your other approach to it is sufficient for this year. And I would also note that Green Avenue, according to this, wins as far as having the highest percentage of speeders of these.
So you're okay with that, Tom? Do you need to clarify which one we're approving of the various options?
No, yeah. That sounds good.
We should be fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah, if the commission can approve number 2 for traffic circle but allow us to change the bike lanes if that's more appropriate.
Keep passing. Okay.
Is there a second? There's a motion to approve all of them, including number 2 for a traffic circle, unless another option appears more favorable related to the bike lanes. Is there a second?
Second for sake of discussion, I guess.
Say again?
Second.
Okay, there's a second. Okay, so discussion.
I have a question on, and I apologize if you've told us this before, but can you remind me how the traffic counts and the percent of speeding are that data is obtained?
Yeah, so we take the average weekday traffic. That is divided by 100, so with a maximum of 30 points, but you can see like Spooner Street has 2,701, so they get 27.01 points for the volume, and then the metric we use for speeding is the percent of traffic traveling over 5 miles per hour over the posted speed limit. So typically a 25 mile per hour street, so it's the percent of traffic traveling over 30 miles per hour. And we take that percent and divide it by 3, and that's the number of points that gets included.
I guess, my question was more, how do you do hoses for traffic counts? Many days? How, like, over multiple periods? And same with speeding. Is that based on police data? Is that based on hose counts, observational?
Yep. So when we get the request or when we get the petition, then we just put in a request for a 24-hour hose count between Tuesday and Thursday. We do sometimes get the complaint that, well, it's only a 24-hour hose count, it's on the wrong day, or there's bad weather. So we typically do work with residents on that. If they have a big complaint, we'll do the study again or ask them to choose what day do you think will be the best, where they'll get the highest, the worst numbers. So we kind of work with the resident on that, but it's typically a 24-hour hose count.
So by hose count, You know, for a citywide counting program, we used to collect only the volume data. But for traffic counting projects, we use you know, two hoses, so it would connect speed as well. So those are from the two hoses. You know, distance traveling between those.
On the same day, the same 24 hours. Correct.
Correct.
And the speeding.
Yeah, those are fairly accurate.
Okay.
And even for our you know, regular citywide count program, we're starting doing the two hoses as well, so that we can get speed data as well. So pretty soon we should have a pretty extensive speed data across the city.
Harold?
I think for me, the overarching question in light of the discussions that happened at TPBB that we talked about at the beginning of the meeting, where I think there is the perception that the way this program is currently working and how these criteria are ranked, where like a street with 350 cars makes the cut, but many other streets do not. Like I think there's, and we can talk about if equity is part of the scoring criteria, which I think, I guess it technically could be with the neighborhood resource team referrals, but that's like all zeros in here, so that apparently never happens. So I guess I just have overall concerns with the way it is handled, and so I think the question in front of us is, do we fix those issues? And I think the answer to that seems to be yes.
We're working on it.
And then the question is, but at this point, do we still move forward with these 10 or 11 projects? Because, I mean, these are the current criteria, so maybe we should move forward with them, or maybe not, and that's maybe where my question was coming from, like, well, what if we don't approve them? Is the money going to go away? And to which the answer seems to be no.
If you can just answer that question, will the money go away, and then we'll get the grant?
The short answer is that the money will not go away. We'll be using the money for, you know, other projects. However, though, I think these neighborhoods will have to wait for the project to be done. You're not sure how long the process will take for us to reevaluate the program and come up with new criteria. So that may take a while, you know, given, you know, public engagement process as well. So my recommendation will be, you know, since these are current criteria, it's not perfect, you know, it's something that we can still use. So let's get a project moving this year, and hopefully next year, if we have the new set of criteria, we're starting to use the new system so that the neighbors who have spent a lot of time working with us don't feel like they, you know, their effort has been wasted or delayed for a year.
Grant and then Chris.
Thank you. I think I agree with what Yang's saying. You know, part of me has a lot of objections with the current program. I've shared those. I think staff and TPBB members and others share some of those concerns, and I'm very, very interested in coming up with a different and better program. So that's kind of where my focus is. You know, part of me is like, well, if we acknowledge there's a lot of issues, you know, how long do we continue to just sort of do this? But, you know, to Yang's point, just sort of pulling the rug underneath the whole thing and saying we're not going to fund anything this year also doesn't feel like a great answer. That being said, and there's kind of different components of I think there's a number of different opportunities as we rethink the program. One that I think is relevant for our decision tonight. So I don't think our question is necessarily do we accept them all or recommend them all versus none. I think just like any year, we should kind of go through them. And if there are certain ones that we're not convinced on, I think we as a body should be, you know, having a nuanced recommendation. So that's kind of how I've approached it. And, you know, without having the luxury of a new program or having long detailed conversations about some of these questions, the one that really stuck out for me and that I think is relevant to tonight is the current kind of point criteria and weighting system, and I think specifically to some of them that made the cut this year. So I just wanted to kind of focus my comments on that specifically here. And basically what really stuck out for me is, you know, currently in the current weighting system, traffic volumes carry a really high weight, right? And so basically any street that has 3,000 or above cars per day automatically qualifies. So basically, by the program as it exists today, if the street has 3,000 or more cars per day and there's zero speeding, and people ask for speed humps, and we just followed that criteria, they would get speed humps, which to me feels problematic. The other one is the kind of school area, ped gen area, school walk route, and bike route categories. I think bike route I can kind of understand pretty easily. School area, I can't remember the details of, you know, how far out it is, but I think relatively good, easy to understand. I'd be interested to hear a little bit about the ped gen area and school walk route and kind of what those are. But either way, you know, those, again, in combination are somewhere between 20 to 25 points if you have all of those things, which is, you know, two-thirds or almost all the way towards where you need to get to, again, just by the nature of maybe being next to a school. Again, even if there's zero speeding going on. And in some of the cases of the ones that made the cut, they did. Basically, if you're a, I think if you're like a school area, that means you're automatically going to also qualify for the ped general, the school walk, et cetera. So you're kind of already getting like 15 or 20 points there. And while I can kind of, I think I understand what the, where those are coming from, you know, if there's a lot of car traffic or there's a lot of pedestrian or bike traffic and everything else were equal, it would make sense to sort of give the nod to where it's a busier, you know, more people would be impacted. So I think there's some value in there, but it seems to me like that should probably come pretty far down the path after first identifying, is there a speeding problem? And so as I went back and looked through this, really, the, to me, the only criterion that really speaks to that is the percent over posted speed limit plus five. I mean, that is, there are different ways we could measure speeding problems, but there's one that we're using in this program, and it's that one. And so I just handed around a piece of paper, but in order for myself to kind of get a better understanding of it, I basically took the same data and sorted it by that percent over five over the posted speed limit. And so that's what this is showing, and I just kind of highlighted in red, these are all 30% or more of the traffic is speeding more than 5% over. So Green Avenue, for example, is number one. You know, if you just sorted on that and ignored ped area, school area, traffic counts, et cetera, you know, that one's right up on the top. And then all the way down to 0% on the bottom, including one of the projects that did meet the threshold for points. And so if you look at that one, for example, the 800 Space Street, basically, you know, again, it's got very low traffic volumes, has no speeding issues, but it gets points for where it's located, and then it gets another 10 points because there were two crashes. And I can't remember all the details of those. I'm pretty sure one of them at least was a quite fast, like I don't know if it was drunk driving or if it was just what that was. But anyways, and this is a route I use every day. So I was surprised to see it on the list, and that's kind of part of why I was like, really, that's so weird. And I know people have asked for speed humps there, but I bike on it every single day during peak hours. I hardly ever see any cars on it, period, other than parked cars. And I've just, like, not to say it never happens, and I know residents there have witnessed it, but at least on these 24 hours, we had none of those 300-some cars were going over 30 miles an hour. And so as we're looking at the decision in front of us, I feel like I could sign off on anything on kind of the top end of the list. For me, the numbers 6 and 9 are, you know, they're getting at only 7 or 8% speeding, which doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, one of those is 1300 block of State Street, so I'm, you know, not inclined to reject that again. And also because it's a traffic circle, I think that actually they're, based on, there was some crash information that we were reviewing the last time around, including like some of the T-bone kind of crashes. So I think actually there's some real benefits to a traffic circle there. So I don't have any objections to that. But when we get down to these last two, to Prairie Road and to the 800 block of Space Street, I can't vote in support of putting in speed humps, which are really only designed to reduce speeding if we have 0% or 1% speeding. So took a long time to kind of lay that out there, but I just wanted to share my thinking on it. And so, and it's the reason why I didn't second the motion. And so I would, again, be in favor of approving probably the rest of them, except for those two, just because they're
they're really low on that list, and I feel like in this case they kind of just have the benefit of a scoring system that needs some review and updating, and so they qualify technically, but I think if we don't have any evidence of actual speeding, I don't think we should be put in speeding control mechanisms.
Other comments? Chris?
I think we recognize that there are some issues with how these are chosen. I don't think that we can sort those out here. As we saw at TPPB, you're working on the system and doing a lot to make that better. But I think now is the time to call out issues with some of these. So Spate Street, again, seems to be the one. The 800 Spate Street, as Alder Foster was just saying, it raises questions to me about, it sounds like the issues are not all speeding related, that they have to do with one way, with people going in the wrong direction and other things like that. So for that one, I wonder if, as I suggested to the registrant, if you looked at turning that portion of the block into a one-way, especially given that there's a park there, it could be an opportunity to reclaim space that isn't needed for street. So that would be my comment on that one. I'll see if there's another question. In the meantime, I had some others, but...
Harold?
Maybe just one response to the question of volume and percentage of speeding. I mean, I think I think I like having the volume of traffic factor in quite a bit, because if you have, say, 10% speeding on a street that sees 100 cars, then you have 10 cars. If it's a street with 100 cars, then you have with 1,000 cars, then you have 100 cars speeding. So I think that makes sense to some extent, and then maybe that's the argument with Prairie Road. I mean, it's right in front of a school. It does have a small amount, but some amount of speeding, and does have a lot of car traffic. So that might just be one counterpoint to that.
Right.
I agree, and I think maybe my point is that once it reaches a threshold of identified speeding issue, then I think volume is a good way to kind of emphasize how to prioritize, but I don't think volumes alone should cross that threshold regardless of any speeding. And actually, so Prairie is one that stuck out for me too. You know, I pulled it up on the map, and I'm curious, I don't know if staff has any more information on this in terms of the complaints they got, but and maybe even, I don't know if you're able to pull it up on the screen, Tom, but one of the thoughts I had, I mean, again, maybe it was just a random day and we had, you know, bad luck day, didn't show what's actually happening. But if it is represented, if there is 1% speeding here, my thought or question is, with the location of the school, et cetera, is it possible that the issue and the concern is more about crossing the street? And that, because often these issues, I mean, I've been on parent-teacher groups and other sources where issues with traffic often get conflated. And so not feeling comfortable having your kid cross Prairie to get to school may feel like speeding, even if cars are only going 29 miles an hour. And so I'm just kind of wondering, again, I think somehow it got on this list, and so some people are concerned, and I'm not trying to say there's no issues, but perhaps speed humps, if speeding, actual speed isn't the issue, then speed humps probably won't solve it. And I'm wondering if perhaps looking at the crossings, you know, going to Continental crossings, other sort of supports to improve the crossing might actually help the issue more. And again, I'm not really familiar with this area. I'm just kind of speculating, but I think that there might be things on the list that where there are issues, just maybe that they're not actual speeding issues that could be fixed with speed humps.
Jessica?
Kind of related to that, it strikes me that this has the highest posted speed limit of any of these on the list. So is it really a question of, is 30 an appropriate speed limit for a school zone area to begin with? And maybe we have a small amount of people going over the speed limit because the speed limit is high, and that's why it makes people feel like they're speeding happening.
Harold?
Can I ask a follow-up question on that? Because, I mean, presumably it's a school zone with a 20-mile, like during school hours. So how does that figure in with the percentage? I mean, presumably you took it during a school day and that was taken into account.
No. So it was calculated by the 30 mile per hour.
So they might have been over
speed
the
limit.
They might have been over the 20 for the school zone.
The way the law is written is that it's 20 miles per hour when children present. So it's a very gray area as to when it's 20 miles per hour as opposed to here 30 miles per hour. So this is just based on the 30. So this would be the percent over 35.
Okay.
Okay. Chris.
Yeah. Question about the process of arriving at the solutions that are presented here. So in, I think you said at Tompkins,
yep.
The speed humps were voted down, and that was at the time that, that would have been at the time that you went back for final survey. Is that right? And then now you're coming back with traffic circles. How does that work?
Right. So Tompkins Drive was reconstructed, and as part of that reconstruction, the residents had come forward asking for speed humps. At that time, we didn't have the complaints from Metro that we do now, and Metro at that time was okay with speed humps, so that's why we moved forward with speed humps. The residents voted it down by, I can't remember, a few votes. It was close, but they did vote it down. And then complaints kind of just continued since then, and there was a formal request this year for traffic calming, so we did another speed study, re-ranked it, because we require a three-year period where you can't get voted down and then just immediately re-rank it the next year. So that three-year period is passed, came back. Speed humps are now no longer an option, so that's why we settled on traffic circles.
And it will still have to go through the final survey?
Right.
Okay. And so the traffic circle on State Street now is similar.
Yep.
But like, so you, do you have to go through the traffic study again?
No. So for that one, we considered it as the same study from last year because of the, I guess, the agreement that we came to here,
mm-hmm. Okay.
That we could look at other things other than speed humps. But it will be, we will resurvey the residents because it's going to be a little bit different survey area than this, what the speed humps were.
Thanks.
Ken?
Are you first?
No, go ahead.
Ken,
can you go back to your initial contact from Prairie and find out what the residents were? I mean, because if it's school parents, uh-huh. who are saying these cars are going too fast when our kids are coming home from school,
yep.
That's not, that's a, are they following 20 versus 30 possibly? So is there, before we would go further on Prairie, is there a way you can just source back
sure.
and say what was the issue?
Sure. Yeah, actually, we did check on that. When we got the, we received a request. So we asked the resident whether, you know, the main issue is the speeding or the issue is more about crossing the street. And the person responded that is the problem is speeding. So that's why we
okay.
put in the traffic calming program for speed humps instead of looking into some other treatments like some help them to cross the street like RFBs.
Okay.
They also have school crossing guard here at the intersection. So the crossing is not a concern, and it's from the request that we got. So the request is more specific about speeding, and they want to pursue speed humps
and for
this case.
Yeah, a little bit more information is that Putnam Road, Williamsburg Way is a lot higher in elevation than Pilgrim Monticello, so there's a pretty big hill that goes from south downhill to north. So I think the original request was an all-way stop at Piedmont to try to slow that traffic down. And that did not meet the warrant for an all-way stop. So since we got that the primary complaint there was the speed, yeah, we suggested the speed humps.
Bill and then Harold?
I guess I'm listening to the conversation here, and I am familiar with that. That street at 5,000 cars a day, I suspect
that the residents that live right there probably do think there's a lot of people who are speeding because of the percentage. But on the other hand, I don't know that I'm not comfortable with the speed study with just one day, 30 miles per hour. You know, I guess I'd really think maybe other alternatives besides speed humps might be better for this, for a street with 5,000 cars. And with the way the speed study that we have for this program is currently set up. So, it's an anomaly. It just kind of sticks out. I don't think speed humps is necessarily the solution for this, of the issues there. And I don't know that, you know, I think further studying is warranted, time of day and day of week and so forth.
So some other related information I want to provide to the commission that last year the commission approved the traffic signal not far from here at Raymond and Prairie Road. So that's going to be built this year. We kind of started work last year. We didn't finish it because we don't have any infrastructure over there. Once the signal is in place this year, we expect the traffic volume going to increase here as well.
Yeah.
So it would be great if something can be done kind of to go along with the traffic signals. But again, I do agree with the commission on lots of good points being raised, being discussed. This is definitely a location that we want to hopefully we can do something to address the concern, especially the impacts that brought by the traffic signal.
Yeah, I think traffic calming is worthwhile here. Mm-hmm, should sure. be done, but I don't know that necessarily speed humps is the solution.
Mm-hmm. Harold and then Chris.
Maybe along those lines, so. From the graphic, it looks like the current configuration is on-street parking on both sides and unprotected bike lanes and two travel lanes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's how it's marked out.
Do you know if those bike lanes are recent? I quickly looked on Google Street View, and at some point they were not there.
They're pretty recent, yeah. They're within the past couple of years, I think.
But not so recent that they might make a difference on speeds, because I think in general, the assumption is that if you narrow the travel lanes, that might impact speeds. But I do wonder, I mean, maybe this is one option to look at. Would it make sense to have a parking protected bike lane there, which I think might be effective? I mean, A, it's better for people biking there, but it might also further visually narrow the roadway or something along those lines. Because, yeah, if traffic volumes are going to go up, then having on-street parking on the door zone bike lane is not great.
So I sense that our momentum here is to amend the motion to have the city look at alternatives for a couple of these. So for the sake of keeping track, I've heard 3 Prairie Road and 11 800 State Street, and I'm sure I'm not keeping track of some, so I'm wondering
those are the two that I have heard a lot of discussion about. Number 3 Prairie Road and number 11 800 State Street in terms of the potential of looking at other alternatives. So
two or so is reasonable, so I'm wondering if any of the commission members wanted to weigh in on others that they were thinking about.
The last sentence again.
If anybody would like to weigh in on others that they had their eye on, or are we looking at those two right now?
Yeah.
I would agree with Christopher. I think if nothing else, what I'd like is to pull number 3 and then to have Tom go back later in 2020 after the traffic signals are operational, and also to possibly brainstorm to see whether this is a time-specific school kids are out, and I mean, because 30 miles an hour or whatever else looks fast if you're looking at kids around there. So anyway, so the issue would be, I think you're doing enough on Prairie to justify saying let's give it another look, but I think we want to look to see whether that speed percentage is an accurate percentage. And I recognize it's hard when you have 20 mile, like you said, it's really only when kids are present. It's not even a time of day, so you can't even set a meter on there and say, just start this at whatever time. But if you can maybe brainstorm and figure out whether that's the issue, because maybe that's an issue that's not a speed bump issue. It's in enforcing the 20 mile an hour thing.
So yeah, just to I guess Chris's point or question, I'd be comfortable supporting all of them except for 3 and 11 at this point. I think just doing more work on Prairie, you've already heard all of that. One thing also maybe to look at, we've started to talk about speed limit reductions and also, you know, why is it 30? Maybe if we brought it down to 25, that might be another component of it. I think the only other thing I wanted to call out was, again, kind of on the list that I passed around, you know, so these stuck out for me as maybe speed humps isn't the answer, but then there are a couple of white ones up on the top that have, you know, like Sawmill Road has 33% speeding, and I pulled that one up again. I'm not personally familiar with it, but I could see pretty easily how I think it looks like it's a cut through from High Point over, and you know, I think that's a case where maybe because it didn't qualify in some of those other, you know, bike route or school zone, et cetera, and it only has 700 cars, but a third of them are going more than five over. You know, it didn't make the cut here, but I guess it sticks out for me as one that maybe we should Sawmill. So it's number 27, I think.
Okay.
So both, basically any of the ones on the top, so Sawmill and Dorset both, you know, seem to be up on the top of the list in terms of percentage of cars that are speeding more than five over. Spondum is also on there. I've talked with Tom about that one already. There's no curb and gutter there, so that's not a candidate, but we've got some other possibilities with that. But so that was the only other thing, is just maybe look at Sawmill and Dorset, even though they didn't meet the current criteria, because looks like there's some real speeding issues on those.
Maybe do some additional research on those.
Yep.
Okay, Harold and then Bill.
I guess one of the ones that currently still is on the list is Spooner, which has this weird 15 mile an hour speed limit where none of the surroundings, I mean, Regent is 30, Monroe is now.
Regent's 25.
25. Over there is 25, yeah.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, but I mean, I see why people speed there, because they might not realize it's a 15 mile an hour. Do we know why it is? Because it's close to two schools.
This is why.
Is that why?
Is it?
It's You had the school. There's a school, primary school, right on that corner of Regent and Spooner, and so you have a whole lot of kids and parents crossing, and so it's sort of narrow, and then it goes and makes sort of, at first has to do a stop sign, then make a corner in order to intersect with Monroe Street. So yeah, it's used as a shortcut a lot to get off of Regent down to the Vilas Park kind of thing. But it is a fairly narrow part on an otherwise wide street, but right there it's narrow.
Yeah, it's the main reason for it. A sign that's 50 mile per hour is because the street is quite narrow down there, especially, you know, like, you know, there's a bridge that's kind of narrow, and there's lots of things going on, a lot of intersections are coming in, so that's a reason.
There can't be many at 15 miles an hour in the city, are there?
No, very, very
few. The bridge.
You have the bridge part.
You have the old bridge going across the bike path.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it doesn't feel narrow because there's no parking on both sides, so that may make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, and yeah, you know, I don't have strong objections to putting speed bumps in there, because why not?
So the general consensus of what I'm hearing, and then perhaps someone can make a motion, is that we would approve 2 through 10, excluding number 3. So we'd approve 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And we would ask that additional research be done on 3 and 11 to see if there are better alternatives, to make sure we're identifying the exact problem and to see if there are better alternatives to deal with traffic safety and traffic calming at those areas. And also ask
Yang and Tom and everybody to look at number 27 and number 29, just to see if there's some things that they might be able to do to help.
Can I speak to number 29?
Sure.
I'm pretty sure I know what's going on. There's some residents that live on that are very concerned about the speed.
Dorset?
On Dorset, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's in my neighborhood, so I'm familiar with it. Mm-hmm. There's going to be several other streets that are going to, I'm sure if these go in, they're going to be requesting. Barton is going to go in or be requesting and so forth. So I think it would be worth more study, but I, you know, and speeding is an issue there. And I know that. So,
yeah, it didn't work well because the volume is really low.
Right.
200 vehicles a day. So,
it's a local street.
Sure. It's a local street. Right?
But it does have a lot of cars. Why those cars speed on that street, I think I know why. But that's, yeah. So I appreciate you looking at that. And I guess that's, and it goes back to really what you're talking about as far as somebody writes a complaint letter to their alder or wherever, and then it gets on, and then it's studied. Goes through the point system, right? So, I mean, it's is that the best way of getting on the list? And because this just happens to be the one where the people have written in, but I think the other streets that are parallel to this have the same issues.
And that's why I think it's appropriate for us to look at the process.
Yeah.
Jessica, the only one I guess I would ask or throw out. And I don't have a strong opinion one way or another, is Meadowlark. It sounded like Alder Foster had some thoughts on why it would be a good one, but it seems like it falls into a similar category of low percentage speeding. A lot of the points are generated just by the volume, and then also has a yes plus for pedestrian general area. I know there's a school there. I don't know if there's other stuff around there that isn't being, I guess, captured just in the images, but I guess that's another one that I would just throw out as a possibility of, is that one that we want
to have them look
have
at
done right now? Okay. Yeah. Or is that one that we would like to exclude?
Okay. So the ones that I have noted for additional study would be number 3 and 11, 27, 29, and the 6. Is that a 6 for Meadowlark?
Yeah, number 6.
That. So those are the ones I have identified for, at least this is our general consensus. We still have a motion on the table, but we'll have to work on that. The ones that it sounds like people are in agreement on approving this evening would be number 2, which would be Swanton Road, 4 Spooner Road, South Spooner Road, 5 Green Avenue, 6 Meadowlark Drive. That's on here as approval. Are you suggesting, Jessica, that we take that off the table as approval?
I guess I would just, based on the reasons that we're excluding others, I would wonder if that is also one that would be appropriate to exclude right now.
So other comments on that from Harold?
Can I maybe ask a question about that one? So speed humps are usually put in mid-block, right? So since this is one of those cases where it's right in front of a school where presumably there's lots of crossing movements, I mean, is there the possibility to look at having median islands, having raised crosswalks, which basically serve the same function, but also have an additional benefit in helping people to cross in front of the street, which then maybe supports, like, you know, not approving, but let's look at what else might make sense, specifically in a location that's right in front of a school.
Mm-hmm. Tom, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I guess the difference between a raised crosswalk and a speed hump would be just the geometrics at the gutter, at the curb and gutter. So a speed hump slopes back down to the curb and gutter, so it maintains that float, that water flow line along the curb. So we haven't included raised crosswalks as part of this program because it typically involves more stormwater management, getting that water to pretty much have to go add inlets or something to maintain that raised crosswalk from sidewalk to sidewalk. And then as far as islands, we could look into that. I think that's something, yeah, that we could look into. They just typically are better for pedestrian crossing as opposed to slowing down traffic. But, yeah, that's, yeah, definitely something we could look into.
So thoughts from the group about Meadowlark, whether we should approve it tonight or
I guess I would suggest that we also take that one off the list and look at, since speeding doesn't seem to be the biggest issue there, it's pedestrian crossing being near a school. Maybe I would also propose that we take that one.
And for additional study?
Mm-hmm, for additional study of other options that might be more appropriate.
Okay, so of the list of those that were submitted and recommended for approval, the suggestions, excuse me, I'm hearing, are to remove number 3 Prairie Road, number 6 Meadowlark, and number 11 800 Spate Street, and ask that there be some more research and some other alternatives explored on those three. And then Grant asked that 27 and 29, which would be Sawmill and Dorset, would also be looked at for some additional study. Not approved this evening, but just some additional research and study done. Which would mean we'd be looking to approve number 2, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, and 10, which would be Swanton Road, South Spooner Street, Green Avenue, Inner Drive, Lexington Avenue, 1300 Spate Street, and Tompkins Drive. So comments about that. How do we feel about where we're at? I hate ending this sentence with a preposition. Sorry I did that. A little levity there. Grammar humor. Thoughts? Anybody feel? Grant?
I would just move what you just stated.
Okay, so that's an amendment to the motion that's on the table?
Well, substitute and alternate. Yeah.
Substitute?
That's fine.
Okay. A substitute motion that we approve what I just said.
I'll second that.
And a second. Further discussion? Rebecca?
I just have questions about the bidding process and timeline. So for the project that commissioners have asked to be studied further, does that mean could they still be considered for this year, or would they be de facto pushed off because of the petition process and the bidding timeline?
I think there's still a little bit of time for us to look at these. The contractor is usually pretty flexible as to whether we add in a few speed humps here or remove some there. They kind of bid it as one big chunk, so it's kind of one price based off the square yard of concrete. So.
Thanks.
So I guess the answer is that we'll try to study those and bring those back to the commission at a future date. And if the commission approves something like that, we'll try to add this to the contract. But with understanding that there might be no guarantee that it can be done this year. Chances are they can. Hopefully they can.
I guess one thing I should mention is that we can look at different options, but and we can get new data. It's just that this time of year with the snow, it's difficult because the hoses don't do well with plows. So they do operate down into cold temperatures. It's just finding a dry stretch to get them out there and collect the data. And
yeah, our regular practice that we don't want to do any data collection on the street by end of March. So that we are sure that we get good data and we are not hose not been damaged by the snowplows. For some time the weather forecast does change. We try to do some houses before and they be out there, and the weather changes, and we will have to redo the count again. So,
but there are other types of research that people have been describing that could be done.
Oh, sure, definitely. Yeah, just the connection part might be challenging. Again, you know, we can do that when weather allows, and you know, bring the results back to the commission. Hopefully, we can add the projects if approved by commission to the to this year's contract. If not, you know, those can be added to next year's contract.
Okay, Jessica, and then Grant.
I guess kind of similarly, so I understand that for some of these, we're looking at additional speed humps, and that would be part of this contract. But then the ones that we've talked about, you know, after additional study, maybe determining that something other than speed humps are the appropriate measure. I guess my question would be then, does that also still make them eligible for, since it's not part of the neighborhood traffic management plan, those improvements wouldn't be, is there still a potential that whatever is determined to be an appropriate solution could be done this year as well?
Well, they could be part of this though, right?
It depends on what it is. That's a great question. So generally, you know, if the commission decides that let's do something else, for example, you know, I kind of think it's reasonable. You know, for example, Riemann Road, not Riemann, Prairie Road, maybe you should just reduce the speed limit, you know, change the signs. For those type of things, we can definitely do it using our you know, regular operating budget. For things, if you know, for things like if we change the two-way or the, you know, the kind of semi-two-way operation space to one-way, you know, we can most likely figure out some money to do the pavement marking change this year. You know, for Meadowlark, if we decide to do Island, that may be a little bit more challenging as that's more involved. But hopefully we can, for those to work, we can, if it's concrete type of work, we can use the same contract for traffic calming projects. The worst case scenario is that it has to have just wait for one more year.
I guess just a general comment, I would hope that anytime that we would discuss alternate measures, that it would still be given some kind of priority since problem has been identified, and you know, by this body saying maybe speed humps aren't appropriate, you know, that we still recognize that there's an urgency for some kind of solution.
Mm-hmm. Grant.
Yeah, just wanted to say in terms of, so we, you know, we gave you kind of two extra assignments that didn't meet the criteria, and then these other two. It in terms of kind of prioritizing what you are looking into, to me, the Prairie and Meadowlark, since they did meet the criteria. But and the questions are mostly around the apparent lack of speeding, and they're all both school zones as well. Those are the two that I would encourage you to sort of prioritize to try and so that if it turns out, oh yeah, the speed data was just wrong, there actually is a problem, we want to go forward with speed humps, we can still get those put in, versus the two that didn't qualify where it looks like there is a speeding problem, I would put those lower on your list in terms of what to look at.
Okay, so anything that met the program's criteria today, but we're asking for additional research, you look at prioritize those first.
Right.
And then
makes sense.
The second, the other two that we just added on, if you have the opportunity and the resources, work on that.
Yeah, when resource allows, we definitely want to prioritize them.
Okay.
But, you know, we are evaluating other projects, we're content programming or other our projects as other projects as well. So if the funding already committed to other projects, we may have to wait. But we'll do more study. We'll bring it back. You know, also for Prairie Road, we can look at if the speed limit is 25 miles per hour, what's the, you know, percent over speed limits number? So that might jump from 1% over to 20%. Who knows? So we'll bring the data back so that the commission can make you know, more informed decisions next time.
Okay, further discussion. Okay, a lot of great discussion this evening. All those in favor of the amended motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Thanks, everybody. And please, this is a lot of good discussion about the process. So if you're interested in being involved in a subcommittee that talks about and works on
enhancing or changing the process, please let me know. Shoot me an email between now and next Wednesday. Okay. Chris, welcome back. Transportation Alternatives Grant, TAP application update.
Chris Petikowski with City Engineering, and we have Renee Calloway with Traffic Engineering. We're going to be giving you an update on our Transportation Alternatives Program grant request. Is due this Friday.
Friday at 5 o'clock.
Yep. So a couple of complications with two of the approved projects, and we are here to potentially suggest holding off on those two applications and suggesting two alternates. And Renee is going to kind of go through.
So we were here not that long ago, but we have two projects that we'll talk about a little bit, the two that are sort of in the orange color, where we have a few issues that make us think this is not the right time or the right program to apply for these. And then we brainstormed a few additional since obviously we would like to get a project, so we want to sort of increase the odds of getting some funding. So this is just a map we kind of added. I added on in orange the location of those two additional projects, Tancho Drive being on the farther east side, more out by American Parkway, and then the Westtown Path extension is the section that is out by County Highway M, Watts Road area on the far west side. So first, a little bit about the Cannonball Extension Path. I think, you know, we were here not that long ago talking about sort of the two options that exist. We had a public meeting. There was maybe more support for the original alignment along the railroad, but also support for something that was parallel to Fish Hatchery Road. But right now, we have been working towards those, but we don't have the necessary agreements that are required to go forward with a TAP application. We don't have the original, we don't have the property secured yet for the original alignment, although we've been having discussions with Madison newspapers, but we definitely do not want to submit an application for something that we couldn't build within the required time frame. And at this point, we don't know if that would be possible. And then currently, we have not got a lot of support from the county for the removal of the bike lane to build something parallel to the path. So that seems very risky and doesn't currently meet the requirements that WSDOT has. So that is that one. And then the Troy Drive Tunnel, the railroad contacted the city and they suggested applying for a different grant program through the Freight Rail Infrastructure Improvement Program. And instead of just rebuilding the tunnel, rebuilding the entire bridge, which is a much better outcome and is what the city was originally interested in, it would allow for sidewalk on both sides, it would allow for bike lanes, it would just be overall better. So we are suggesting to go forward in that direction instead of the more limited facility through the TAP program that we were looking at. So with that, we came up, we brainstormed, what do we have that could meet the WSDOT requirements for ability to construct, things that don't need property, that don't have other sort of railroad constraints that we could build. So we have the Westtown Path extension. This would be the section from Junction Road to Commerce Drive. So this is sort of the west end of that path extension. Next year, we are extending the path under Gammon Road as a part of a TAP, TAP-funded project that we got in the past. So this would leave one more section after that in between Commerce Drive and
in between High Point, and Gammon.
Yes. That would still need to be built, but it would start closing the gaps in completing this entire project. The other one is called the Tancho Drive Path. It's, if you're familiar with the American Parkway, there's a park called the Northeast Green Space that is out there. Just over the border, there is, in Sun Prairie, there is an underpass of 151 that this could connect into. And then get you to American Parkway and through there. We do have some landfill
funds that have been collected over time that we were hoping to use to build this project, but it's not large enough, and my understanding is that those fees do not count up very quickly, so if we waited to have all those funds, it would be, I don't know, 20 years before they would be enough to build this, so we are saying that we could do the match with those funds and then build the project with TAP funds if it was selected. And then the other thing that came up is that one of the eligible projects are just planning projects. And so the pedestrian plan was last updated in 1997, and this would be an opportunity to apply for funds. To do this, potentially we would apply to do this in 2022 after we have a complete streets plan, which is in the current budget, and it would build upon those principles. So that's just something that we thought of. It's how Milwaukee funds a lot of their planning projects, so it seemed like an opportunity in a year where we want to ensure that we get some funds to add that in. So those are the projects. I'll go back to the map.
Yeah, and I can just speak to the process a little bit. So there was a resolution to the council approving the first four projects and prioritizing them. We don't have time before Friday to get that substituted, so the approach here was to kind of get the consensus from the commission and the sponsoring alders of that first resolution to see if this is an approach that made sense to folks, and if so, we could apply for the revised projects Friday and follow that up with an official council resolution that gets referred to this board for official approval, and then that would meet WISDOT's timeline.
If I can just say, and Rebecca, maybe you can comment on this. You forwarded an email to me today, and it was forwarded out to everybody. I'm not sure if you saw it, but it was with regard to the Troy Tunnel and the priority of that project. And from Justin Markovsky, who really expresses strong support related to safety issues of redeveloping the tunnel, but the alternative you're proposing sounds much better. So I don't know if you wanted to comment on that, Rebecca.
That's why I'm here to say I'm fine. Well, this has been an issue in District 18 for decades, really, for a long time, and it's just been engineering has been beating their head against the brick wall of the railroad owners and WISDOT around this. Now we have a different WISDOT. We have owners, railroad owners, who are taking the initiative to say, let's do a much more complete reconstruction. So that resident was advocating for the more complete project, and we're okay with, you know, foregoing the culvert, the switching out of the culverts, if it really looks like we can get a complete project.
Whenever we get emails, I'm trying to read them into the record, at least to some Thank degree, you. To make yep. sure that everybody's Thanks. Noticed.
Renee or maybe Alder or Chris, the railroad has come forward with this. How long have we, I mean, is this a rather recent knowledge
yes,
that they're going to apply for FRIP funds?
Was an email that came in around New Year's, and Rob and I met with the railroad and Rob Phillips, that is, and WISDOT twice now
okay.
to kind of go over the logistics, and it looks pretty promising, and the application is due February 1st, and it's pretty much ready to go.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm excited about that. I'm yeah. glad to hear that, and that's really good news. And I don't know, did they give you an indication of how many projects are going in for FRIP this year? Do they have a feel?
I don't have that feel.
They no. don't? Okay. Because I know it's... I don't know how competitive it is now compared to the way it used to be. But, you know,
yeah, I, the only thing I've seen is that they do have a chart on the WISDOT's webpage of past applications that were approved, and there were a number of them in the past few cycles that have gone to WSOR, and so it looks like it's possible.
They're competitive.
Yeah,
WSORs. And I guess I'm wondering about, you know, because we're talking about two state programs, correct? These are
yes.
the TAP funds are state,
yes,
and so is the FRIP. So would they be willing or look at together, combine?
I
I don't know about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
they didn't say anything yet when you met with them. The state people did with the rail and
I mean,
met with Bureau Rail, I assume.
There could be some elements that were eligible for TAP.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it's fine if they can swing the whole project with just FRIP funds, but
let's go for that.
Yeah, but or you run the risk of not getting anything.
Maybe.
That's I really like the project.
Yes. Yeah.
That's my bottom line. Our goal is to get the project.
The FRIP is a 80-20, and based on the cost estimates that the railroad has put together, if we got the FRIP grant, there would be no need for a TAP grant.
Okay. Would the city then be responsible for the portion or all of the 20%?
That we have to work out with the railroad yet.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good news.
Other comments, Chris?
Just a question, mainly out of curiosity. Are both of those programs on this more or less the same timeline in terms of like project delivery?
So the freight rail project is a little bit more flexible and actually could be done probably quicker. TAP is a 23 or 24 construction year.
Yeah.
So it's possible the FRIP could even be done in 22.
So thought, Grant?
I'm enthusiastic about both of the kind of new ones. I think those are both good projects. So I would support adding those into the list. The pipeline's an interesting one. I think there's definitely a need to improve pedestrian facilities in Madison, so that's not an issue. And I think in particular, actually, maybe just because it's winter, but I think winter maintenance for ped facilities is an area that really needs some attention. And at some point, we did some work around winter maintenance for bike facilities as a subgroup of ped bike motor vehicle, and that might be something that TPVB needs to look at, doing something similar there. The only reason I call it out is just thinking about kind of our work plan with TPPB. So you mentioned complete streets, which we're sort of just starting on. I think we've already talked about we don't have a ton of money there, so it may end up being kind of a phased approach. Maybe we do part of it this year and we need to do some follow-up the next year. We're starting on Vision Zero, which is a sort of we'll have a big planning element, and then obviously all the metro stuff. And so just in terms of, I know if we got the money and we could sort of consult, have consultants come in and do it, just in sort of our ability as a city and, transportation policy and planning board, et cetera, I don't know. It's just, it feels like it's not on sort of our list right now. And so I'm not worried about it. I mean, we could do it and it would probably give us some good info. It just doesn't maybe feel, if I'm kind of comparing it against getting some projects in the ground, I guess my preference would probably be to focus on these at this point, but I'm also not opposed to doing a updated pedestrian plan. It's certainly been a long time.
Mm-hmm. Chris? Oh, Harold?
Are you suggesting all three? Are you asking us to...
Well, I guess we couldn't apply for all three or... Not. I mean, obviously they're due Friday at 5:00. So one of the things it would be good to know is sort of prioritization. I mean, I think we can always go back later and ask to have it amended, but we are supposed to submit it with our priorities. So if we pulled the others out, we have one and two, but then what would we make that order, and would it be all three? Harold?
How much money are we talking about for the pedestrian plan?
We're talking, we probably asked for $160,000, so it wouldn't be very small. And it would be out. Like, we would get it later, potentially 22 or 23 would be the request.
Yeah, which in a way maybe addresses a little bit of that concern. Like maybe in 2022 we'll be really happy that right now we have that money available.
Yeah. That's the thinking, though, right? Like we wouldn't start it at the same time because we're doing Complete Streets and Vision Zero. This would potentially come after that. So it could be good or not because we don't know where we'll be with those.
So in terms of prioritizing, mm-hmm. there would be two that we had recommended, Autumn Ridge and Main Street Bike Boulevards, would be remaining on there. How would the group prioritize those? We heard Grant say pedestrian plan he thought would be at the bottom of the list. Other thoughts about prioritization? Jessica?
I agree that I like the idea of ones that are ready to go and will complete some of our projects or get a good start on some of our projects now, so the first two on the list. And if there's any benefit to having a more curated list, then I would prefer to just leave off the pedestrian plan mm-hmm. to have a stronger focus on those other ones that maybe have a stronger need. And then just in terms of the additions, I mean, I really like the Tancho Drive, and I really like both of them. And potentially I would put those even as two and three with bike boulevards as four, just because they provide an opportunity to take advantage of improvements that don't exist right now.
So leaving Autumn Ridge first, having the new first two, second and third, and then the current number three would move down to number four.
Question about the two new projects. The Westtown Path, so the one segment that is not currently in mm-hmm. anywhere on the radar, that's because of eminent domain.
It is,
right?
Correct.
So the completion of that, which I think, I mean, is going to make a big difference where you no longer end at High Point or you no longer end at the other side of the mall. So that's to be seen, I guess. And with the Tancho Drive path, is there, what's the plan there? How does that fit into the larger system? I mean, it's well connected on one side, mm-hmm. but like, you know, going over to Portage Road, or what's the vision there?
Portage Road, so.
So I guess at this point, it gets you from having to go all the way up to Hepker when you're
yeah.
kind of headed towards American Parkway. But then long term, I think there are some plans.
Go back to that slide.
This one. The one that's this one.
Do that a little bit. Maybe actually your city map might be better.
Something bigger. Or Google Maps or something.
So some Tancho Drive paths up here. You know, we over the years been working on the thank you. The Goodman Path, and have been run into some roadblocks with the railroad, and now we're looking at you know, Garber and the Autumn Ridge Path, and so as far as how does that kind of connect into the system, you know, we would like to extend the path through the Sycamore area here and then along the railroad corridor where we actually do have right of way already. And the plan is to have a path system that does actually go to that underpass and tap into that Tancho Drive path to get you over to the American Center. So long term, like, you know, probably 10, 20 years, it's potential that this whole system is all connected, and that's our hope. As far as going to Portage Road, there is a planned underpass with of 151 in this area, which would get you over to the Portage Road area, but that would be kind of dependent on a 151 or a 50 I-39 rebuild.
Other thoughts on prioritization?
No one else has thoughts, I would make a motion maybe for a prioritization of Autumn Ridge number one, Tancho number two.
This isn't on here as an action item, is it? It's on here as informational only.
Oh,
so,
okay. So
he's going to bring it back to us for the formal action.
Well,
you're just looking for our
recommendation. Make a motion for.
Yeah, it would be helpful to have sort of a.
So it's a non-official rant. Motion. So you're laying on the table the prioritization.
You're just
going
to take action this evening. Yeah. Yeah. So informationally, I would suggest Autumn Ridge followed by Tancho, followed by West Town, followed by Main Street. Throw that out there for general.
I was thinking the same thing.
Okay. Other thoughts?
Want to split hair, West Town, I see, might be serving more people right now, but I don't feel strongly about it. To me, West Town and Tantra are kind of like, either way, wherever you think it's more competitive, I feel like.
My understanding is the Tancho piece does actually complete, we would still need one more segment to complete West Town, but Tancho does complete from Sun Prairie to a center of employment at American Center.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my thought process with.
Chris? No? Any other thoughts? Does that give you what you need?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure does.
Yep. Okay.
And then it'll come back.
Yep.
Once it's referred again.
Okay. And good luck on Troy Drive.
Yeah.
And maybe just informationally, so with the West Town one, my concern was driveways, which may be already on your radar. There's the gas station driveway. There's two Aldi driveways.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a number of driveways there that we'd have to deal with.
I assume this is all going on as far as the Troy Drive, that the city is going to give a letter of recommendation to that project?
Correct. That's our anticipation, yep.
Well, I hear a groundswell of support from the Transportation Commission for that effort. So if you'd like to add that in, you certainly can. Might anybody disagree with that?
And two of the sponsors of that resolution are sitting here, and the other one, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know if you heard back from her, but
no, I haven't. No. So,
we'll get the resolution passed.
Yeah. Well, everybody is very excited about that, actually. Mm-hmm. Other comments? Okay. Thanks very much. And we'll look forward to come back again then, Chris. Right? In resolution form.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Next, crossover report, Grant or Chris?
I was looking at this earlier. We had a presentation from the mayor on her priorities around, supposed to be around capitals, or I don't know what it's supposed to be about, but it was about transit priorities and BRT priorities. So if anybody missed that, it might be worth going back and checking it out. And we already talked about the neighborhood traffic management discussion, which, just to summarize that again, the city's doing a lot to already start thinking about tweaking how these things are prioritized. So that was very good to see. Oh, you weren't there, were you?
So,
there?
The last meeting?
Yeah, you were.
Remarkable.
That's all that I can recall.
I'll talk a little bit about the Complete Streets RFP, and so that'll be in front of, I think, a draft of that. We're expecting to see at our next meeting, and so, again, that actually was funds that was dedicated towards a head plan update that was changed in the budget cycle to instead be directed towards Complete Streets, starting that work. So for folks that are interested in that, or if you have feedback, you know, send it in to staff or to members of the TPPB. So we're hoping to get that out. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we're also continuing to focus on the Vision Zero, as well as the kind of big picture metro system revamp. So those are kind of two other big planning processes that TPPB is working on. And then one other one I'll just mention, we had a kind of brief introductory conversation. The title of it was Sequence of Public Meetings for Reconstruction Projects. So this was something that we started talking about at the joint meeting, and really just kind of starting to get a sense of how do we handle transportation projects today, both in terms of meetings through our official bodies like Transportation Commission, Board of Public Works, TPPB if it's a larger project, and then also the PIMs, the public information meetings, the neighborhood meetings, and, you know, where do those fit? Do they fit together? Could they fit together? Is there overlap? Can we sort of reviewing how it has grown up and looking at, is there an opportunity to make that work better?
And I did see some comments on the sheet that was distributed, some preliminary potential definitions about how much complete the geometrics would be before they came to the Transportation mm-hmm. Commission, and under what circumstances would it come back again. And those were two things that we had talked a lot about at the joint meeting, so good to have some follow-up discussion about that as well.
Yeah, I think one of the goals with that conversation ultimately is to make sure we have good process so that the decisions we're arriving on are, you know, well-informed, et cetera, but then also to not to make it be an efficient process, especially for staff and for, you know, not having things going back and forth and having sort of confusion there, or just having clarity around expectations. And, yeah, if TC votes to approve something, for staff to know clearly, here's all different things that we could change without having to bring it back, versus, oh, if it's this big of a thing, then we want to bring it back and get approval again. So some of those things, yeah, that we talked about. So, yeah, this was, just that preliminary discussion to figure out where we go with it.
Good. Any other comments on the topic?
I watched that because that was followed the and that was very good. I thought that was, you guys did a great job on that, and I think that has great promise. I think it'll help everybody, especially as staff.
I think so,
as far
too.
As how far can they go. Mm-hmm. And then without having to, you know, and those PIMs, sometimes they, you know, the tone of those meetings, the people that come there, when they leave, they think this is going to happen. And yet there's, in some cases, in certain projects, there's a lot of steps that have to happen with other committees and boards. And mm-hmm. they might feel they didn't. Was my time worthwhile going to that meeting at that time? Yeah, if things suddenly change or drastically for various other reasons that aren't known by the staff at that meeting.
A question. So it seems like personal delivery vehicle robots have started showing up on city streets, so it's no longer just on the UW campus. So I just wondered if that's something that you have on the agenda, or that's something that maybe we need to consider having on our agenda, where, like, it's regulated in state law, but I know municipalities have some power to further regulate.
So there was a draft ordinance that was introduced at council and referred to TPPB, I think back in like August, September or something, and I think from a Legistar glitch kind of got lost. So we identified it a little bit back, but we talked through it in our future agenda items list, and so I think the chair of TPPB is checking back on that. And so I expect we deal with it in some way or another. I mean, perhaps the original resolution is no longer what the sponsor, I think it was sponsored by the mayor, so I would expect we either, it will come in front of TPPB, or maybe there will be a recommendation to place it on file, or maybe there will be a new version. But we did talk about it, about the need to kind of resolve that one way or the other, both that as well as the micro-mobility question, because that's been kind of on the list too, so in terms of scooters and et cetera. So those are both on the list, but we haven't really dug into either yet.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, thanks. All right, announcements from the chair. We're looking to schedule our joint meeting with the policy board earlier this year. We talked about possibly March. Sounds like April might be a better time frame. We're looking at a TIP presentation. Chris Petikowski wants to do a joint presentation to both bodies. Traffic calming is certainly something that would be a major issue, and probably looking at the action items from the last meeting to see where we at. You know, what did we do? Were we successful in addressing those action items we said that we were going to look at last time around? Because we have some metro service changes that we'd be dealing with up until possibly the first meeting in April, we're looking at potentially the policy board meeting on the 20th of April or our TC meeting on the 29th of April. So our first choice is going to be to try and do it when we already have a meeting scheduled because, hey, we're halfway there because half the people already have it on their calendar.
And we have the room.
And we have the room, yes. Good point. So we'll keep you posted on that. Relative to tentative agenda items, we've been doing the list and attaching it so you can see what we're looking to have at the next meeting. So we have quite a list here, and I have some that go out maybe to the next meeting after that because, you know, not sure which one they're going to go to. I would also add the joint TC-TPPB subcommittee or work group on traffic calming process, which we discussed earlier, that I would hope to have on our agenda for that next meeting as well. Does anybody have any other future agenda items that you want to add that aren't on the work plan or on our list already? Okay, good. All right, we're at that time where we need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion, is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Hey, 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Whoa!
Way better than 3.5 hours. Good job, everybody.